2 hours down, 3 hours to go. Keep McPherson on the fan, the Keith McPherson show. KM to AM. So far, we've hit on a few different things. I had Sweeney Murdy come in to talk Yanks and John Sterling. We talked a little Mets and the rally pimp. And we talked about the Jets and the Giants in the draft. And we're going to get back to that in about 10 minutes when Nick Bumgarner joins me from The Athletic. We'll also play some cuts from GM Joe Shane. But let's take my next two calls on the Yankees and Mets before we do that. Let's go to Peter in Hauppauge, New York, on the fan.
Hi,
what's
Keith.
Up, Peter? What's
up? I called you last night.
I know.
I just wanted to say something about John Sterling. I remember one time he was on. They switched the announcers to Mets announcers. The Mets announcers went to another station, and then John and Susan did the Met game. They like kind of trade. And I thought that was kind of cool.
Oh, I missed that. I don't know when that happened. What year was that?
I think that was in the like early 80s.
That was like a Freaky Friday mashup. That was like a
exactly.
Switch places, a wife swap.
Yeah, a radio swap for a couple of innings, and then the Mets announcers came back to. I think the Yankees were on CBS 88, and the Mets were on the Fan.
Oh wow! Wish we could dig some of that up. I never knew that went down.
Yeah, that went down. Actually, you have to, because I remember that, and I'm not lying; it's true. Okay. I listened to the game. And I'm like, oh wow! And after that, I don't watch the games on TV. I like the announcements, but I'd rather listen to it. I'm so used to Howie Rose. I used to listen to Howie Rose when he did his sports show on the radio.
Yeah, yeah. Howie's great. And I hope Howie keeps going. Hope Howie's got this full season.
Yeah, Howie's a year younger than me. I'm 71. He's 70.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, about the Mets. I hope the Mets keep going. I hope the Mets make the playoffs this year, and I hope the Yankees make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, big test coming up with the Dodgers, and I think that they're always ready for the test against the Dodgers. And if they go in there and take 2 out of 3, we're gonna really be looking at the Mets as a decent team. I know there's some people that aren't ready to say what they are, what they aren't yet, but they're not what we originally thought.
I'm going to say something you don't like. When the Mets play the Yankees, I root for the Mets because I have to, because my mother was a big Mets fan, and she would roll over in her grave, you know.
Yeah, that's fine.
So my whole family, including my brother, Timmy, I'm Kimberly's father. I was talking about my niece last night with you. And her father's a big Mets fan, and you don't dare talk about the Yankees in front of him. My brother would kill me.
Thanks for the call, Peter. Morris is in Brooklyn. Morris, you're on the Fan.
How you doing, Keith?
Good, good, good. Got to get these calls in, get these clips in, get to my guests.
Yeah, I have two things to say. First of all, I was very happy about the last game with the Blue Jays that they won.
Were you impressed?
I was impressed by the win, but
you're not easily impressed, Morris. Not yet, not yet.
Yeah, that goes with my name, Morris in Brooklyn. Impressed,
Morris in Brooklyn. Not easily impressed.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see those shiny rings.
Yeah, that would be a long time from now. That would be like opening day of 2025. The ring ceremony.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Morris. All right, let's play some clips from Joe Shane, the GM of the Giants. Connor will take us through the clips that I requested. If you haven't heard this stuff, I think as Giants fans, you need to. I think as football fans, you need to. And you don't need to hear from me or BT and Sal or Boomer and Gio or Evan and Tiki or whoever. Like, listen to what the GM's saying and decipher for yourself what you think the Giants are going to do in a week on draft day.
So, Keith, here we got the first clip is him talking about any thoughts on trading future picks to move up.
Mm-hmm. My job is to do what's best for the franchise. So if there's an opportunity to go up, move back, stay, whether it's in the first round, third round, fifth round, that's what we'll do.
Then he answers, do teams ask more in a trade if they think you're moving up for a quarterback?
Yeah, I would say that's probably true, Dan. I would say that's true. Like, if people know what you're coming up for, depending, you know, again, I've been involved with this with Buffalo. It probably wasn't as high, but, you know, I do think Tampa Bay knew what we were doing.
Then he asks, in clip three, he answers, would he regret swinging and missing on a quarterback more than passing on a quarterback?
You let your board talk to you, go through all these conversations, and, you know, again, we're going to do what's best for the franchise, and all of our meetings and all of our preparation and when we set the board is all what's best for the New York Giants.
Clip four, he talks about he thinks there's a lot of wide receivers in this draft that can make an impact.
I do think it's a deep receiver draft. I do think there are, again, they come in different shapes and sizes and speeds. But I do think it's a deep, you know, wide receiver draft from top to bottom, depending on what you're looking for.
And then clip five, he talks about the status of Darren Waller.
Yeah, we're giving Darren his space. We've had conversations with Drew Rosenhaus, his agent, and he's kept us in the loop on Darren. So we're giving him space. Hopefully he's going to make a decision here in the short term. But, you know, we're giving him time and his space to make a decision on what he wants to do.
And then the last clip here, does he feel he needs to draft a quarterback like maybe J.J. McCarthy?
I don't think so. I think with, you know, Drew's experience, you know, he started games and played, and, you know, Daniel's experience, and then what Tommy did last year, another year in the system, Tommy's come a long way. So, no, I think we could go in with the season with the three that we have, and, you know, I'd be comfortable with that.
I like this guy. I think he's smart. I think he's well-spoken. I think he knows what he's doing. And just from trying to decipher through his words, like, he's not telling you anything, right? It depends, right? It depends Thursday what comes through that phone for the Giants. He's going to do what's best for the Giants. Someone might call him and want the sixth pick, and they might be offering something that's very appetizing. They might take that to do what's best for the organization, right? They don't have to take J.J. McCarthy. They have three quarterbacks with way more experience than J.J. McCarthy. Man, I was talking about J.J. McCarthy. I think Fleegs was on with me. I forget who J.J. McCarthy was splitting time with a couple years ago at Michigan. He wasn't even the guy a couple years ago. Like, he wasn't even the guy this year. They ran the ball. They had an awesome defense. They didn't have to depend on him.
But, Keith, you know who also split time at Michigan?
Tom Brady. You know what? We got to go all the way back. Well, you know what? Tom Brady was picked 199. He wasn't the sixth overall pick. I mean, they also talk about the Giants and looking at the wide receivers. This is a very deep wide receiver class, so they don't have to take Malik Nabers. They could get receivers all through the draft. I just think that Shane and Daboll are going to trust their board and their vision and their eyes and what they see, and they're not going to make any rash decisions. And if they swing and miss on a quarterback, they swing and miss on a quarterback, but they're going to take the quarterback that they like, that they evaluated through film and meetings and decide, yeah, this is our guy. And then it's on them to make him the guy. 877-337-6666. Mike and Clifton Park, stay on hold. You'll be first up. Giants fans, call in. Jets fans, call in. But right now we're going to break so I can bring in my guest, Mike Bumgarner, who covers the NFL for The Athletic. Now we're really going to start talking NFL draft, and I'm going to ask him some questions beyond just the Jets and the Giants. If you're a football fan, we're about halfway through my show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Yeah, yeah. Let's get right to it. Nick Bumgarner joins us covering the NFL for The Athletic. He's a senior writer. He knows a thing or two about football. We're about to talk about the NFL draft. What's up, Nick? You're on The Fan.
What's going on?
You know, just passing the time. Got a five-hour show. We're a week away from the NFL draft. And what I tell everybody is all of this talk doesn't matter. This is all smoke screens, smoke and mirrors, right? These are teams trying to throw other teams off their scent. I also say that the NFL draft is a competition. These teams in the top are really competing for assets, for players that they want, hoping that another team doesn't get them, specifically a team in their division. You know, what do you think about all of this stuff that we've heard so far leading up to the draft with the combine and the pro days?
I think that's such a great point. It's something that nobody really talked about much, or maybe enough, I should say. It's talked about some, but never enough. You know, it's important to remember, yeah, these guys haven't played a game since December, right? We were able to evaluate them all winter, all spring. Like, every team is still sort of trying to figure out what they want to do based on how the board's going to go and everything else right up until, you know, draft night. That's pretty real. But, you know, when you start to hear, like every year we hear, you know, a handful of, like Drake May this year has been one, and for example, well, you know, suddenly we're scared of him for some reason, or I don't trust this, or I don't trust that. A lot of times that stuff to me gets, you know, like last year with CJ Stroud with the S2 test, that stuff gets leaked out by people who want those players to fall, who want them to fall so they can get them cheaper. We know that happens. So ultimately to me, it's pay attention to the tape. Pay attention to those workouts and, you know, what the scouts are telling you, because these last couple of weeks, like you said, it's just all jockeying for position and to see what you can get the most out of.
Yeah. What do you think about the teams like that go from, okay, it's a surefire thing that the Commanders are going to take Jaden Daniels, right, to now they're open for business, or it was a surefire thing that the Cardinals had already spoken with Marvin Harrison Jr. Wait, they're open to potentially trading that pick now.
Yeah, so I think that, again, like, I think that those are also things where sometimes I wonder if it's like you were always open for business. You know what I mean? It was, yeah, like you were always open for business and you didn't want to say it. You didn't want to tip your hand, because when everyone knows that you're, you know, trying to trade the thing, it's harder to trade, right? So I think that happens a lot too. I think we saw New England sort of do the same thing maybe a couple weeks ago. Maybe it was at owners' meetings where everybody had talked for weeks and weeks, and Robert Kraft even came out and was like, you know, I want a quarterback and this, that, and the other. And they're like, well, you know, maybe we'll trade. And it's like, okay, well, I mean, we'll see what happens on draft night and everything else. But at the same time, I think that a lot of it ends up just being hot air for the sake of for drama.
Now, a lot has been made about Caleb Williams, from him being the Heisman Trophy winner to a diva, crying to his mom, painting his nails, living in a penthouse in L.A. when Reggie Bush, you know, got his Heisman taken away.
Right.
We're just in a different time with NIL. I remember even during the past NFL season, there was a rumor that Caleb Williams wanted to, a percent of ownership of whatever team drafted him. We're not hearing any of that now. But what we are hearing is that it's obvious that he's going to be a Chicago Bear. And when I look at the moves that the Bears have made, I think this kid is walking into a great situation. They are not going to be bums. He's not going to be surrounded by no talent like Justin Fields kind of walked into.
Right.
They've got some players around him to help him out and ease this transition out of college into the NFL. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the Bears are really the great example in the NFL right now of what to do and what not to do with quarterbacks. Because the reason why they're in this situation drafting a quarterback again is because they drafted one that they weren't ready for, you know, 4 years ago with Justin Fields, and or 3 years ago, whatever it was, and had to move off of him. And like, they drafted him at a time when they did not have an offensive line, they didn't have playmakers, they didn't have an identity, they didn't have a defense that could do anything for him, and it was just a total mess. And at the, you know, they've since gotten themselves somewhat aligned with GM and head coaching staff, but more importantly, I think they've fixed areas that you know you're going to have to fix before you move forward with quarterback. They've got a much better offensive line. He's going to have playmakers. They've got another high pick in this draft. They could get another receiver if they want, maybe. So, yeah, he's going to be in a much, much more stable situation than Fields ever was. And, you know, he's a better player. He's a better prospect. And I think that's the end of the day thing here, too, with Caleb, is he has the ability to do some things that the only guy that can create some of that stuff off platform the way he can, I think at the end of the day, is going to be Mahomes. I mean, I think he has some of that ability in his bag. So, you know, those are all very real. He's a different dude, but you said it. It's a different era with NIL. A lot of these guys are different dudes now, and they're all making money. So that's just part of the deal. And I think NFL teams, they all get that too.
We're on the phone with Nick Bumgarner. He covers the NFL for The Athletic. I mean, it's funny you mentioned Mahomes, because I was going to go there. The Bears missed out on Mahomes and drafted Mitchell Trubisky, but here it comes around. Now you've got the prospect that, like, you know, he himself made a statement that he thinks he can do everything Mahomes can do. And when you watch both of them play and some of the throws they make going off script, he might be, there's no Patrick Mahomes, but he might be the next closest thing to Patrick Mahomes in the next 5 years or so.
Yeah, he has that twitch or that off-platform ability to get that thing out from weird angles that no one can, you know, thinks possible. When we think of Mahomes, we think of all those crazy, that throw in the Super Bowl where he's parallel to the ground and still making that throw. Like, he harkens back to the old shortstop days where he can, you know, it's like you're making a throw from the deep hole or whatever over to first base. Like, Caleb does the same thing in so many ways. He's big, strong, he's faster and a better runner and all that. And he's a better athlete in some areas than Mahomes is. So, no one is Patrick Mahomes in terms of all of that. A lot of it, he gets Caleb into trouble trying to do some of that too much. But he can do a lot of that and it's capable, can you pull it off? And, you know, he can obviously do that at a high level.
From one Heisman Trophy winner to the next, I think Jaden Daniels makes a ton of sense to go to Washington at number two. They need to draft a quarterback. I don't think Sam Howell is their plan for the future, especially with this new regime. And I also think they have done a good job with stacking talent on that team this offseason, where he's not walking into a situation where he's going to have to do it on his own. I mean, the Patriots now moving away from Bill Belichick with Gerard Mayo and those guys, why wouldn't they take Drake May, take a flyer on him? They're not going to be able to roll with Bailey Zappe. We know Mac Jones is out of there. So it is looking like we're going to see three quarterbacks off the board. Then it's going to get interesting at number four, where I just think that if you're sticking with Kyler Murray, you have to take Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah.
You can't sell me on Michael Wilson being your number one wide receiver. I don't think that they trade that pick, but there are some rumblings that the Cardinals could trade that pick, and we're going to start talking about our local teams, to the New York Giants at four to take J.J. McCarthy. I have been on record this whole time saying no, 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 and no. You can't make the mistake of taking J.J. McCarthy, and you're not in a position right now where you can make a pick and wait on the development of a J.J. McCarthy. You just paid Daniel Jones last year. What do you think about the Giants and where they are at number six and potentially trading up to take a quarterback or not at all? We just played a couple clips from Joe Shane, who made it seem like, no, we don't have to do that. We've got three quarterbacks.
Yeah, I don't see the logic in that at all. I didn't see that at the combine. I was there when he was asked about it and talked about it a little bit at the combine. It was the same kind of thing. And I think at the combine he tried to ease some of it a little bit. I don't think it worked with some of the fans, but it's like, look, you have to be ready for a guy before you take him. And, you know, whatever happens with Daniel Jones is going to happen with Daniel Jones. But if you take a guy like J.J. McCarthy this year and give up assets to do it, and have to move up or something to do it, let's say that has to happen or whatever. Let's say that he doesn't. Maybe he falls or whatever. If you take him and have to sit him and he just sits there for a year while your starter who you're paying all this money is like nervous about it and that doesn't work, and then the coaching staff, you know, ends up falling apart, that doesn't work. You haven't fixed all the other areas on the field that you need to fix. The Giants have so many other things that they have to get better at right now, and I think that that's the perspective that needs to maintain there above all else. I'm very curious to see what they do there. I would not take a quarterback. I would certainly not move up. If anything, I would try to maybe even look at moving down if I were the Giants to try to maybe add some more picks and try to fill that thing out. And heaven forbid, give Daniel Jones a little bit more help and see what happens there too, right? So that's me. If I'm the Giants, I'm trying to continue to build the roster and just get quality players in there. So I think Brian Daboll is a good coach. I think he can do some things if you give him a chance to let them build a team. But if you're going to just say, hey, we're going to go get a quarterback every year and a half, then nobody's going anywhere with that.
Yeah, when I look at the Giants' picks, they have pick six. Then in round two, they don't pick till 47. So there's 41 picks between their picks. Why not? If you're not in love with a quarterback, which I don't think they're getting one of the top three quarterbacks, a lot of times on this station last year, we were saying that they should tank to get one of the top three quarterbacks, and they didn't. Two of the teams that they beat in the Patriots and the Commanders are going to get their pick. So why not try to trade back? Why not try to give yourself another pick later in the first round so you can add talent? And Joe Shane himself just said this is a deep wide receiver class. So maybe you're not thinking that, you know, let's say Marvin Harrison goes to the Cardinals at four, and the Chargers, who obviously need a number one wide receiver, take Malik Nabers. If you're not wild about Rome Odunze, trade back. Get another asset.
And I think that the point to make there is that all three of those receivers, including Rome Odunze, are going to have trade markets. There will be people lower in the draft, within reason, I think, that will be willing to go up and get him, because all three of those receivers that are going to go in the top 10 are legit dudes. They are walking the door tomorrow and play football for you and be good. They're top 10 prospects in this class. I think some would have all three of those guys in their top five in this class. They're that highly thought of, especially Harrison and Neighbors. So I think there's going to be a market there. I mean, I don't begrudge anybody that wants, if you're sitting there with Marvin Harrison on the board and you're Giants somehow or Neighbors and you want to do that, I'm not going to say anything wrong about that. Those are difference-making players that can help you win football games. But if you're not exploring that market, then I think you're kind of doing a disservice to the rest of the roster, because you have a chance, like you said, to really add another starter somewhere in the top 100.
Yeah, I think that they could stand to add a first-round receiver and offensive lineman. They have gone offensive linemen in the past. Evan Neal, I'm not sure what he's going to be, but I think there's a possibility of them trading back and having later picks where they could get a top wide receiver. It's not going to be the top three, but then they could also get potentially a tackle. Now, when I look at these tackles, I think it's just going to be a case of once Joe Alt goes, they're all going to go. That's a very important position in football, and there's a lot of teams in the first round that I think are going to need a tackle. I think the Giants could go tackle. I think the Jets could go tackle. I think the Raiders could go tackle. The Saints. What do you think about the first round tackles? And I think there's some obviously cream of the crop, but man, you some of these guys are just, when you watch their film and you see their build, who they are, they just project to be 10-year tackles in the NFL.
Right. That's the best news about this class is it's that the tackle class is super deep. It's one of the best positions. You know, the receiver class is great too, but there are 6 first round tackles for sure in this class. I think there's 12 to 15 guys that are, you know, top 100 players in this class, which is, you know, really, really saying something, I think. And then there's also a bunch of guys on day 3 that are super interesting projects. This is the COVID class in so many ways. Like, a lot of guys stayed in school, and a lot of linemen who normally would have left stayed in school. They made some NIL money. They got the extra year due to COVID. And so you're seeing this, like, overflow now of super really talented linemen. A lot of guys that can come in and move people right away. So I think, you know, that's one where even if you wanted to wait, and that's why I like the situation for the Giants, especially if they're able to trade down, because their needs in this draft, receiver, tackle, these are really deep drafts for those needs.
Exactly.
You can, if you add more picks, you can take another swing in the 3rd round or 2nd round, and maybe you fall on a guy like a Brandon Coleman at TCU or Rosengarten from Washington or Blake Fisher at Notre Dame, like somebody like that can come in there and play and help you win games that otherwise you wouldn't even have had a pick there. So, and receiver, same thing. You can get a guy in the 2nd, 3rd round that can come in and start. I mean, that's 100% true in this draft. It's not always the case, but it is in this draft, and I think that that's something for a team like that, like in New York's situation, they really need to take advantage of that.
Yeah, so much of the draft to me is a game and playing the board and taking the best,
right,
the best available player that fits your needs. And when you look at teams that do that effectively, they end up winning. Like, I feel like the Lions did that last year, and they picked players that made an immediate impact, and look where they got this year. They were a couple plays away from going to the Super Bowl. So I look at this Giants draft, and even with the Jets, now let's talk more about the Jets. The Jets have a team with Aaron Rodgers and a defense that's set and just a couple holes that they have to fill. Brock Bowers, to me, as I talk about the Lions taking Sam Laporta after Dalton Kincaid came off the board, like, I don't think that the Jets have to take Brock Bowers at 10. I don't think anyone needs to take a tight end that high.
No, I mean, obviously the case there is you play the board, you see what happens. I mean, I think that that's one, too, where we don't know where Brock's going to go. I mean, people talked back, you know, months ago, maybe he falls to, you know, all the way to 15 or something.
Colts,
I mean, you could
yeah.
possibly trade down and get him if you wanted to. I mean, I think in some cases. But at the same time, I would say the exception, there are exceptions to every rule, and I think Brock Bowers is actually an exception. I do like him for the Jets. I don't think it's a slam dunk there. I think he would help them in a couple areas. He helps your run game and your pass game. That could be another target for Aaron Rodgers. I think they would have a lot of fun together. But at the same time, it's to your point. I mean, I think that's another position over the last 3-4 years in college football, and it'll be this way in the future too. That position has become more advanced. It's become better taught at the college level. It's deeper, and the guys that are coming out now are ready to play. You can get tight ends in the 3rd and 4th round now that can help you, as opposed to years ago, it would be, well, we'll see, you know, or we're not even going to bother doing it. So I think the position is advancing, and I think that's another one where you don't have to freak out and do something that you're not ready for if you don't have enough picks. You can wait and see what happens and maybe add later.
What do you think about this theory? Unfortunately, when I was a child, the Dallas Cowboys won a bunch of Super Bowls where I was very young and impressionable,
yeah,
and I said, I'm going to be a Cowboys fan, so I've gotten the opportunity to watch the entire career of Tyron Smith coming out of USC, and when he came out, he was young, and he was a surefire tackle. He was a guy where I'm like, yep, makes sense to me, but now at 33, he signs with the Jets on a 1-year deal, and what I'm telling all these Jets fans is, like, this guy is one false move away from being injured for weeks, and now he's coming to Florham Park. He's going to be in the cold. He's going to be on that MetLife turf. I feel like they need to use that first round pick and have an insurance policy, not just for him this year, but when he's not there next year. It's a 1-year deal. What do you think about the Jets taking a tackle at 10?
Yeah, I love that for them, actually, because I think that there are so many good tackles. We just talked about it. Six guys probably that are first-round tackles, no doubt, first-round grades. But due to this, you know, rush on quarterbacks, due to the fact that there are three outstanding receivers up there, you're going to have a natural sort of push on some of these tackles. Some of these guys are going to fall. Like, I don't know. You know, I really think, like, Joe Alt is not going to fall too far here. Fashanu, though, or J.C. Latham or Fruaga, depending on what you like, any of those guys I think are certainly possible there at 10. And, like, I love Olu Fashanu. I think he's a guy that, you know, last year, if he'd have gone out, I think he's a top five pick.
Yeah.
Like, he's a guy that can come in and start and play right away and play for 15 years and be a dude for you. Fruaga is a similar guy. As Olu would come in and immediately make a difference in the run game and immediately help you. So that, to me, for the Jets has always been too tempting. Every time I've gone through any mock with them, it's like there's always a tackle there that's too good to pass up on. And part of me thinks, as tempting as Bowers is, and this is going to be the thing for a lot of teams, as tempting as Bowers is, there's going to be a better tackle there, and that's the more prudent answer for them, for both right now and for the future.
Yeah, mock drafts have the Dallas Cowboys taking Amarius Mims out of Georgia at 24.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're not re-signing Tyron Smith, and Tyler Smith, who they drafted out of Tulsa a couple years ago, wants to stay at guard. So this is a draft where I see a lot of these tackles and their profiles. As I've been, you know, looking these guys up, they just look the part. A lot of these guys are 6'8", 300 pounds, and when you watch the film, they're throwing guys around. Those are guys that you're going to plug in into the NFL, into these offensive line, and expect them to be, you know, protecting guys' blindsides for the next 10 years. And there's a few of them available.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, with those guys, like Amarius Mims, Tyler Guyton, are two of the dudes that are 6'7 plus. Mims is 340, and they are freak athletes. So that's the other part of it, too, is they run, like tight ends.
Yeah.
You know, like they run like fast tight ends, almost, right? Like they run like guys who can play basketball.
It's amazing how fast these guys are now. This was never the case.
Yeah, it's wild. Not fair, anyway. It's not fair.
Scary.
Not human, almost.
It's scary.
In some ways, but that's the appeal, and that's why it's so deep this year.
Okay, now here's a couple prospects I want to ask you about before I let you go. Like, somebody is in love with Michael Penix Jr. right now. Somebody is waiting to make the move and say, yep, we're going to take Michael Penix Jr.
Right.
I look at Penix Jr. almost as like a I don't want to compare him to Jalen Hurts, but kind of how, like, the Eagles were like, yeah, we'll take him. Like, yep, he fell.
Yep.
You know, we want him. That's our guy. I think somebody's going to take Michael Penix Jr. and make him their guy. Who do you think that potentially might be?
I mean, that's a great point, and it's a great question, though, because, I mean, what is that? Because that's exactly what it would take, I think, for
or even, like, a Jordan Love. Like, you know how Jordan Love was there?
Exactly. Maybe you wait, you know, stash him or whatever. But I think that the point is that when the Eagles did that, they had an offensive line that was ready. They had, you know, playmakers around him that were ready. And I think that that's what you're going to need to do if you're going to take a guy like Penix or Bo Nix. It's like I've looked at, like, Denver. In some ways, I know Denver has floated around some trades, but I think if Denver did some smart things, traded down, maybe add some more talent, continue to work on its offensive line. Like, Denver runs offense in a way with Peyton that, like, you need a good quarterback, a guy who makes nice decisions and good decisions, but, like, it doesn't have to be the best player in the league. It doesn't have to be, like, a superstar. I think the Lions right now are a team that Jared Goff is a very good quarterback, but he's not the best quarterback you've ever seen. They have a really good offensive line. They have players around him. So there's a lot of teams like that. Like, I wonder what the Raiders are going to do. I wonder how they're going to try to build it. But, you know, there are teams that, what is your identity going to be? How are you going to try to play football? If you're going to be a team that runs the ball and just, you know, ask your quarterback to take care of it, and a lot of teams are trying to do that right now, you know, maybe Penix is your guy. Maybe you think he can, you know, hold the fort down at least for a couple of years, even though he is older. But you never know. I mean, he's overcome a lot already at this point. I know a lot of people don't really want to bet against him.
Cooper DeJean out of Iowa. This kid, I've seen his high school highlights from him dunking the basketball, him running track. I just think he's a freak athlete, and if he lands in the right situation, he could be a star in the NFL. We don't see too many white cornerbacks, but he might be the next guy. They have the Packers taking him at 25, and I'm like, you know, Green Bay, Iowa, makes sense. Who do you think is going to take Cooper DeJean? I think there's a lot of people looking at him because of his athleticism.
Yeah, I love Green Bay for him. Philly, Detroit, you know, one of those teams in the 20s there. All those teams that need corners. You know, I think the question about Cooper, and it is real. I think a lot of it, like you said, you know, the white thing, I think it brings up the question of, can he play outside? I think he can do it. I'm not sure if he can do it against everybody. And I think that that's, you know, and that's kind of the thing with a lot of those guys who are nickels or slot guys. So I think it's going to depend on maybe what team sort of what they look like at the slot and how many times they want to throw out a guy who can be a safety hybrid. But I mean, I think hybrid stuff is these defensive coordinators love guys like that now.
Yeah,
I mean, especially guys that have ball skills and that can move around. I mean, DeJuan's a guy that you don't have to take off the field. You know, he never has to leave the field. He can move around, do different stuff, and you can change defenses. So to me, he is exactly what you're looking for. It reminds me of, he's a smaller version of this, but Kyle Hamilton was a guy that fell 2 years ago, and he should not have fallen. And it was one of those things where it's just because of the position he played, and you look at him last year, he was outstanding. So I think, yeah, Cooper is going to be a guy who we haven't even talked about the punt return stuff that he adds to you as well.
Right.
So he's a really, really good football player.
Yeah, Terrion Arnold out of Alabama, of course, most people think he's going to be one of the first corners taken. But Kool-Aid McKinstry, he's a guy that like was in mock drafts last year, supposed to be the top corner off the board. And now I'm seeing him as like 3 or 4. But I think he's somebody that is going to be a star in this league for a long time. I don't know who's going to get him. I'm looking at Tankathon, and they have the, I think the Texans trading up to grab him. What do you think? Where do you think Kool-Aid lands? He's got a cool nickname.
It does. It's so funny, like how these things work out. Because like when the year started, everybody thought, or a lot of people thought, Kool-Aid because he's longer and he has kind of he had a better body. He was a little heavier and a little bigger. Like thought he would be the breakout guy there, and then Terrion Arnold would be maybe the guy that slipped underneath him, and it really ended up being the other way around. I mean, Arnold just kind of outplayed him. Not that Kool-Aid was poor or not that he didn't play well or something like that, but I mean, like, Arnold has just been a more complete, more all-around player. But I think the fact that that sort of happened, that Terrion sort of jumped him, has made people maybe talk a little down on him, because I still think he's a first-round pick. I still think he's a guy that can go in and start somewhere next year. He's a little patient. Like, he's not the in-your-face player. He's not the super physical, you know, get after guys the way that a lot of these teams love now. He'll sit back and wait on things, but that's pretty good too. I mean, if you're good at that and know what you're doing, I think that's and he does. He's a really patient and quality athlete. I think he'll be a really good player somewhere. Really good first step too.
Again, we're on the phone with Nick Baumgartner. He's a senior writer for The Athletic covering the NFL. As you can hear, he obviously knows his stuff. The last question I'm going to ask you here is a parallel, because I've talked a lot about running backs and where they're drafted. I don't think we're ever going to see Saquon Barkley, right, number 2 overall again in the NFL. And then even last year with Bijan Robinson, I think he went 7 overall out of Texas. There's an interesting prospect coming out of Texas this year, and mock drafts have the Giants taking him at 47, and they have him as the first running back off the board in the second round. Two questions for you. Do you think that Jonathan Brooks could fall to the Giants in the second round at 47, and they might actually, you know, trade back, get another pick, and take him sooner? And do you think there will be no running back selected in the first round altogether? Obviously, we saw there were some last year. The Lions, I'm blanking on his name, out of Alabama.
Gibbs, yeah.
Yeah, Jahmyr Gibbs. Yeah. But do you think this is a year where we see no running back taken in the first round? And if so, do you think, you know, Jonathan Brooks comes off in the second round and maybe to the Giants?
Yeah, I don't think there'll be one this year. I think this running back has become one of those things where, you know, unless the guy is a true difference maker in two areas, and Robinson and Gibbs both are, they can catch the ball. And, you know, I think both of them were 1,000-yard backs, and both of them had more than 50 catches last year. So, I mean, that's kind of what you're looking for if you're going to draft a guy in the first round. And there's really nobody in this year's class that has at least proven the ability to do that on a consistent basis. Brooks is probably the best one. I wouldn't be shocked if he falls to the third round. I mean, I definitely think he would be there in the second round. It would not stun me if you go the whole second round and there's not a guy that goes. I mean, maybe, because there's a lot of teams that randomly need one this year, and a lot of teams are trying to run the ball more, so maybe. But this is not the best running back class. It's good, it's solid, but there's not a lot of like explosion at the top, which will help teams from probably, you know, doing things that they shouldn't be doing, and maybe that means these guys will go maybe where they should, because a lot of these guys are going to be guys that I think help a starter. They're going to be, you know, you have a 1A, and then this guy will be your B, the guy that spells the starter and sort of plays like a role instead of carries the ball or is the bell cow. I just don't see one of those guys in this class.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping the Dallas Cowboys can get a running back or two. They just signed Royce Freeman, and I'm like, come on. The running back room is
Rico Dowdle. There's a few guys that could do better than that in this class. I'll say that.
Yeah.
There's a few guys that could up Royce Freeman, but we'll see.
Nick Baumgartner from The Athletic covering the NFL. Thank you for the time tonight, Nick.
You bet, anytime.
Appreciate it. 877-337-6666. It's wide open. I don't have a guest joining me until like a quarter after 11. So if you heard anything that you want to talk about as far as the Jets and the Giants draft, the NFL draft in general, call me up. If you do want to get a word in on John Sterling and the Yankees and the Yankees facing the Rays this weekend, call up. If you want to talk Mets and the Dodgers matchup, L.A. versus New York, it's always a good time when the Mets face the Dodgers. I think this is a big one for the Mets and Mets fans if they can go and take 2 out of 3 from the struggling Dodgers. I know they're in first place. They have 12 wins, but they should be better than that. Let's do it, man. We're going to get into conversation around the Knicks-Sixers series later on, and we're also going to hit on the Rangers-Capitals and Islanders-Hurricanes as well. We'll do everything. This is Keith McPherson on The Fan. We're on the second half of my 5-hour show. Call me up. We'll be right back. Still here. Let's see if we can take a call or two quickly before we go to the 10 o'clock break and update. Keith McPherson on The Fan. Another 5-hour KM to AM. I love it, man. I just am pumped when I get the opportunity to be on for this long while people are awake during baseball season. Like, this won't happen next week. I think actually Monday I have one, but then Tuesday through Friday it's all like 10:30 to 2 a.m. shows. And a lot of times those shows are dominated by the games that are played that night. So it's cool to have open shows, be able to take a lot of calls, bring in some guests, talk all the different sports, kind of flex my sports knowledge and my hosting ability and everything else, you know. Blessed to have this opportunity to be on The Fan. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Let's see if we can get a couple calls in right now. I said I was going to go to Mike in Clifton Park when we were done with the interview. Mike, you're on The Fan.
Hey, Keith, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for holding.
Sure. So I think, you know, I think with the Giants, I think J.J. McCarthy is definitely a smokescreen. They're hoping that he gets drafted either second or third, and that way Daniels or May is there for them. And the thing is, they could move up to get him, get a quarterback like that. But it means that Arizona or the Chargers would have to give up drafting Neighbors or Harrison, which they may, you know, so they may stay put as well. So Giants, I think they're in good shape if they play their cards right. And I think if Neighbors falls to them at 6, they should pick him and then, you know, try to move up in the second, third, or fourth round and get a quarterback there.
Yeah.
All right, Keith, I'll listen to your thoughts.
Thanks for the call, Mike. It's all about playing the board. It's all about knowing who you want. And if they're there, yeah, you make a move. So if it's a smokescreen that, yeah, we love J.J. McCarthy, we think he's really good. You know, Jim Harbaugh is telling you he's the best quarterback in the draft. Oh, his pro day. Drake May's stock fell a little bit. I just was in the newsroom watching ESPN. They're showing all his picks, some terrible ones, some throws where it's like, what are you doing, bro? So if Drake May falls and Brian Daboll thinks that's a guy he can work with and mold, then maybe they take a quarterback, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think that the top three quarterbacks are the top three quarterbacks. Caleb Williams is a Chicago Bear. They probably already fitting him for his helmet, shoulder pads, and his uniform. Jaden Daniels makes sense for the Washington Commanders to take him if that's who they like, if they don't like Drake May. And then, I mean, I can just already see Drake May in the Patriots uniform. So I think those three guys are 1, 2, 3 coming off the board. And it just makes too much sense for the top two receivers to go to the Cardinals and the Chargers. They don't have a number one wide receiver, right? Like I just was talking about Michael Wilson. I think I had him for a couple weeks in fantasy. He's not a surefire thing that next year he can be your number one wide receiver with Kyler Murray. Marvin Harrison Jr. is a lock. He's going to be a good receiver in the NFL. I think that's who the Cardinals take at 4. I don't think they move off of the 4 spot with a quote-unquote generational talent available. And then Malik Neighbors, who a lot of people are saying is better than Marvin Harrison Jr., but I think that's just hype. I think that's just, you know, looking at the testing. Marvin Harrison Jr. doesn't have to test. He doesn't have to show up to the combine. He doesn't have to do anything. Okay, his last name says it all. So maybe Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers, who I just saw sign J.K. Dobbins, maybe they take Neighbors off the board, and they're not willing to trade with the Giants for the Giants to trade up and get the receiver, whatever. We're about to find out in a week. None of us know. You know, we're all talking through the possibilities and the speculation, but all in all, I think the Giants, led by Shane and Dable, this is their third year. I think they've done, you know, Shane said it, they've done more work on this draft than any of the other drafts. They know their needs. They know where they are. They're smart football guys. They've been around the block. They've been doing this. They did this in Buffalo. Like, they're not going to get duped. They're not going to get fleeced. They're not Dave Gettleman. They're not Joe Douglas. Like, these guys are going to make the right pick, and I'm excited to see who it is. 877-337-6666. We got one call in before the break and the update. I got 2 hours left. We are rolling. The time is flying. Keith McPherson on the Fan right back after this.